Welcome to the Books of Titans podcast, where I seek truth in the world's best books. I'm your host, Eric Rostad, coming to you from the beautiful Books of Titans studio in Franklin, Tennessee. My goal is to read 52 books per year and share what I'm learning. I'll talk a bit about each book, tie ideas together from a variety of genres, and share the one thing I always hope to remember from each book. Today I'm going to cover Draft Number 4 by John McPhee. This is book 32 of 52 for my 2020 reading list. Draft Number 4 is a book about writing. John McPhee is a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer who started his career at Time magazine and also worked at The New Yorker for many years. He has written 30 books, and in a recent New York Times feature about him, writer Sam Anderson wrote this: "McPhee has built a career on small detonations of knowledge. His mind is pure curiosity. It aspires to flow into every last corner of the world, especially places most of us overlook. Literature has always sought transcendence in purportedly trivial subjects, but few have ever pushed the impulse further than McPhee. He once wrote an entire book about oranges, called simply Oranges." End quote. He wrote another book about one tennis match. Just one tennis match, an entire book about one tennis match. His book that won him the Pulitzer is a 700-page book about how North America came to exist, called Annals of the Former World, but in a geological sense, how it came to exist. Draft Number 4 is a two-for-one book. On the one hand, you learn about writing techniques, such as how to structure an article or a book, how to let a story progress, and what to leave out. But on the other hand, you are watching a master at work. You are reading about the things he's teaching you to do. It's really an incredible book in that sense. It was released in 2017, so it's relatively new, and McPhee is 89 years old, and he teaches at Princeton. In fact, that's how I first heard about the book. Tim Ferriss is the one who recommended the book. He talks about it all the time on his podcast. And the way that Ferriss heard about it is that Ferriss went to Princeton and he took the course that McPhee teaches about writing. And Tim Ferriss just raves about this course. He talks about it all the time. It had a tremendous impact on him. And this book, Draft Number 4, contains a lot of the content that McPhee covers in that course. So in this episode, I'll cover some of the main ideas that stuck out to me from this book. As for how long it took me to read it, it was 5 hours and 2 minutes, and that was over 3 days. It's a 192-page book, so it's relatively short. You can get through the pages pretty quickly. I like to highlight that just so you have an idea of how long it might take you to read the book. I read rather slowly and take quite a few notes while I'm reading. So 5 hours. Average person watches 4.5 hours of TV a day. Average American does. So if you're the average American, you just stop watching TV for a day and some change, and you can easily get through this book. So who is this one for? Well, first off, it's for writers, but second off, it's for readers. I've read a few different books about writing for this project, and what I've found is that they really help me to become a better reader. There's something about reading about the process of writing that you learn what goes into it, and you become a more informed reader. So this is one of those books. It really you'll find that it helps you become a better reader, whether that's of fiction or nonfiction. So in segment two, the next segment, I'll get into three different ideas that stuck out to me in this book. And then in segment three, I'll cover the one thing, the one key idea that I always hope to remember from Draft Number 4. If this is your first time listening to the Books of Titans podcast, welcome. I'm glad you're listening. I do not do advertisements. I don't like them myself when I'm listening to podcasts, so I avoid them. But I've just moved into a new house, and the room is such that it is smaller than where I just moved from, and I've had to sell my bookshelves because they just don't fit for this room. And so I'm looking at having to do some custom shelving. And this custom shelving will also incorporate a desk, and an area where I will do these podcasts going forward. I'm attempting to raise some money to do this, and if you've ever wondered how you can support the podcast, well, here's your chance, because I need help building these shelves and paying for these shelves. So you can go to booksoftitans.com/support, and you'll be able to give any amount. At that link, I will keep everyone updated on the status of how much I've raised and how much I have left to go. And so if you've gotten any value out of these episodes, you can now return that value and help create a magical Books of Titans library and studio. Now back to the book. I'm going to cover three ideas here that stuck out to me in draft number four. The first is the idea of structure. So how do you structure an article or a book? Do you consider the topic and then kind of come up with a structure after you become acquainted with the topic, and maybe some idea, some ways of putting that forward just kind of come naturally? Or do you start with the structure and then try to find a topic? Well, I'm familiar with the first option of choosing a subject first. That seems kind of the logical idea. But McPhee puts forward an idea that is pretty amazing. He puts forward the idea that, well, you can start with structure first. So I want to read, this is very beginning of the book, page 4. And it starts with this: to a bulletin board, I had long since pinned a sheet of paper on which I had written in large block letters, A, B, C, over D. So ABC divided by D. The letters represented the structure of a piece of writing, and when I put them on the wall, I had no idea what the theme would be or who might be A or B or C, let alone the denominator D. They would be real people, certainly, and they would meet in real places, but everything else was initially abstract. This is no way to start a writing project, let me tell you. Nonetheless, I was doing something like it when I put ABC over D on the wall. End quote. He then goes on to share how he came up with a story just based on putting that structure on the wall first, kind of looking at that structure for a while. And then how can I have three people that all somehow relate to this denominator D, another person? And so thinking of a structure of a story in that sense first before even coming up with a topic, and then eventually just coming across a topic that he was interested in that fit that structure. That was just amazing to consider something like that, because I've never heard of somebody doing that. He also talked about, you know, do you write an article about based on the chronology of how the events happen? So this would be a nonfiction article or a nonfiction book. Do you just write by the order of how things happened? You know, you start with the person's life, where they were born, and then you go through their life. Or do you start dead center in the middle of that person's life and then go through their life based on themes? So just different ways to structure. The key is that you get to decide. You as the writer get to decide the book's structure. The reader should not ever notice the structure of the book, but it's an important way to arrange everything, and there are different ways about going about it. So that's the first thing, just the structure of the book. The second thing is the lead. The lead is the first part of any article, and it's usually the first few sentences. So it's separate from the title. The lead is not the title, but the lead is the first few sentences or the first paragraph that introduces the purpose of the article. You can think of it as being the hook. It's the thing that you want somebody to read that and then read the entire rest of the article because they are so interested in what is in that first part, that lead. And McPhee talks a lot about the lead and the importance of it. And he says that if you get the lead ready, if you write the lead, you have completed 50% of the story. Once you have that, you could maybe also think of it as the thesis statement. Once you have that, you are halfway done. It should be sound. It should never promise what doesn't follow. He also says it should be a flashlight that shines down into the story. And it should be a promise. This is what this is going to be about. And then you fulfill that promise with the rest of the article. And the reason this stuck out to me while I was reading it is I started thinking of the work that I do a lot. I'm not a writer. I've really only written for school, things that were required. But my work now is I work with clients on their online presence. And so a lot of that is dealing with websites, online advertising, those sorts of things. And this idea of lead relates very closely in website land with someone's tagline. So on a website, you kind of have an intro, maybe a title of the company, maybe the name of the company, and then underneath that you'd have the tagline. And that's the thing that introduces the company, what they do, who they help, what problem they solve, that sort of thing. And so you can kind of think of a website arranged as a tree. And so everything is based off that tagline. So it's very close to what McPhee said is you don't ever promise something that you can't fulfill in that tagline. And that tagline kind of defines what is going to be within the rest of the website. The interesting thing is it takes my clients the most time to write that tagline. And sometimes I'll walk them through a process of getting that lead or that tagline, but it is the hardest thing for them to put into words. And the same goes with articles, where it's 50% of the story. It's 50% of the work. Once you get that though, the rest really flows. So it was neat to contrast that, and I guess compare it and also find some similarities in those things. Now, the third thing is a phrase that comes up over and over in this book, and it's this: writing is selection. Writing is selection. So for the author, that includes, the author is going to include things in a story or a book that interests him or her, and they are going to exclude things that don't interest them. There's selection in the structure, the first thing in this segment. There's selection in what to include and what to keep out, what to exclude. There's selection in words. One thing McPhee asks is, should you use a dictionary or a thesaurus for finding words? And he puts forth an interesting answer in the book for that. So hope you'll check this book out. Those are three things that stuck out to me. There were a lot of really interesting stories and other ideas to help you with writing. Now in segment three, in the one thing, this is the segment where I talk about the thing I always hope to remember from the book. And in this one, the idea that struck me the most was that of fact-checking. So let me just build this up a little bit. McPhee spent most of his career at The New Yorker, and this book contains a number of stories from that time. And one thing he would talk about, there's a whole chapter dedicated to it, is this idea of fact-checking. I mean, he had fact-checkers. The New Yorker had fact-checkers that would scour every article that was to be put into the magazine. So one of McPhee's articles, the fact-checker spent 3 to 4 weeks just going through, full-time, going through one of his articles to confirm that everything in there was correct. And here's what that particular fact-checker said. She said this: each word in the piece that has even a shred of fact clinging to it is scrutinized, and if passed, given the checker's imprimatur, which consists of a tiny pencil tick, end quote. So that was the fact-checker's role. It was to call the experts. It was to call. So if something was written in an article, they would call to make sure that was true. But they wouldn't just call one person. They would call two or three or four, and they would make sure that what was written correctly, that it was right. And if it was not right, if the fact could not be checked, it would not make it to the final printing. So why is this so important? Well, that same fact checker said that an error is everlasting. So once it got to print, it was everlasting. And I think that is even more so the case today. I've worked with different clients on their Wikipedia pages. And the way that Wikipedia works is that you have to cite something in order to add it to Wikipedia. So if a piece of information is in a newspaper article, you can cite that article and then put that information in Wikipedia. if you don't have a citation, it's really hard to get information into Wikipedia. So let's say an article is written and it contains information that has not been fact-checked. Well, it gets released. Somebody can cite that on a Wikipedia page. That in turn gets cited by other sources, which then just perpetuates this error. At that point, it becomes nearly impossible to fix. So why did this stick out to me then? Well, just the diligence of that, working 3 to 4 weeks on one article, that just would not happen in our day and age. Perhaps in some magazines, but magazines have been decreasing, and what is there now is this the 24-hour news cycle. And so most of what we're seeing is an article written and released almost immediately. There's not even time to fact check things anymore. And so that's why this popped out so much. You hear the term fact checking all the time, but to me, when I hear that, I don't think that people are actually checking facts. It seems like a narrative is being checked more than facts. So if a story is put out, it must fit the news organization's narrative. And if it doesn't, then it gets called out. Then there's something wrong with it, as opposed to being called out for facts not being right. And yeah, there facts do get called out and get checked, but it just seems like there's been a shift, and especially in the amount of time that used to go into, and granted, it different between an article for a magazine and one for a news organization, but we're inundated with these articles in these news pieces, and those are mainly coming out immediately because they have to. The 24-hour news cycle, you're just having to put things out immediately so that everything kind of seems to be breaking news. So that was the thing that stuck out to me, just that we've lost that art. And with that, we've lost a lot of quality. And so that should inform you in terms of what you consume. Books will have gone through more scrutiny than a magazine article. Magazine articles will have gone through more scrutiny than a news piece. This ties into the Lindy effect that I talked about in the Anti-Fragile episode. Just be careful with what you consume. I don't think there was some golden age where everything was pure and fact-checked and wonderful, but something has been lost, and just be careful with what you read. Read books like this instead of like Draft Number 4. So to recap, this was an excellent book about writing. I've read some great ones for this project, and this was one of my favorites. It's part tool guide, part considerations for what to think about while you're writing. It's part just a marvel of to read a master at his work. And then there are also just some amazing stories that he has come across in his life. I'd like to start reading one McPhee book a year, and the one I want to start with is his book about oranges. He talks about it a little bit in this one, and it sounds like it'd be a really cool book to read. And there's 30 of them, so I could be reading one of his books for the next 29 years. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at eric@booksoftitans.com. Let me know what you thought about this book if you've also read it. I mean, one of the reasons I started this project was to connect with other readers and to discuss the books that I'm reading. So I'd love to hear from you. You can also go to booksoftitans.com/contact. I have my address there. You can write me a letter. I love getting letters. Follow Books of Titans on Instagram or Twitter at Books of Titans, and the website is also stocked full of resources to help you find the best books and to create your own reading list. I'll be back next week discussing another book from my 2020 reading list. And until then, keep reading, keep learning, and keep listening. I'm out.